You can't see it, you can't taste it, but some are calling it a serious health threat every parent should know about. Wi-Fi, wireless internet, is in schools coast to coast, but why do some kids say Wi-Fi is making them sick? In a 16 by 9 investigation, we put Wi-Fi to the test. Here's our Carolyn Jarvis.
They are gathering by the hundreds, hacking a public forum in Toronto, filling a school board meeting in Peterborough.
I don't know what I'm going to do if you have Wi-Fi in there. I can't do this to my daughter. I cannot put her through this experiment.
And assembling at a church in Vancouver, a fever pitch building over what they see as a threat invisible to the eye.
Society in general doesn't want to lose a convenience at the expense of safety.
They're talking about radiation exposure from Wi-Fi or wireless internet, and they're concerned it's making their kids sick.
I just think that we don't know, so why risk it?
Today, schools across the country are rushing to install it, but these students say the convenience isn't worth the risk.
I had heart racing, headaches,
nauseous.
It's a really weird feeling.
Weak, and I'm really shaky.
And when they're not at school?
Does it happen on the weekends?
No.
There's no rhyme or reason to the symptoms. They range from headaches to nausea, heart palpitations, even rashes.
22 minutes to 10 o'clock on this Thursday, the 8th day of September, and we have breaking news this morning. This story could have huge implications. So just before we go to a private school in Collingwood where they're making this news, I've asked Pam Colleen to come in just a wee bit early this morning because we had, Pam, this is amazing coincidence, we had a whole hour, mm-hmm. and we have a whole hour booked this morning from 10 to 11, on the issue of radiation from electronic devices, everything from your alarm clock to your microwave to hydro wires to cell phones to Wi-Fi. And here today, on the very day when all the media are full of stories about McDonald's doing a $1 billion takeover with a primary focus on Wi-Fi in their restaurants, comes this explosive story out of Collingwood. Before we go to the principal of that school, let me just ask you, this is something you've been talking about for a long time.
Right, because I used to be very sensitive to a lot of that, you know, electrosmog, as it's called. I was hypersensitive to it. And fortunately, I'm a lot stronger today. As you know, I've rebuilt my health and a lot of these types of things I used to react to, fortunately, I can handle these days. But I have a tremendous amount of empathy for people who are sensitive to this electrosmog. It's being put out there without consideration of people's health in general. Even for healthy people, they could be reacting and may not know it.
Well, it's one thing to hear you say it. It's quite another to see a school decide to rip out a Wi-Fi system that they have already installed. We'll be checking in with some private schools in London to see how they react. Matthews Hall, for example, I don't know if they have a Wi-Fi system installed. But let's go to Collingwood, to the school where they are making this, historic move. Roberta Murray Hurst is the woman in charge. The principal is her title at the Pretty River Academy. Roberta, I understand you're on a break right now.
I am with the children are at recess.
Well, thank you so much for joining us in spending your recess with us. Roberta, tell us, first of all, what the concern is at your school.
We at our school, we are continuing to research a variety of different systems and look at all of the ramifications of each system. So I have Michelle Rich here, who is one of our teachers as well as a parent at the school who's done extensive research. And I have other parents that came forward just to ask questions. And so we looked for a system that would provide the same service faster, more reliable than the Wi-Fi that we could implement that would then eliminate all of the health concerns, and we were able to do that.
And this is a wired technology, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
What is the primary concern? You've suggested there's a number of concerns. How high on that list is the health concern?
We always are concerned with regards to children's safety, and so what we like to do at Pretty River is collect the documentation, and we are always concerned with regards to children's safety. We wanted a system that fulfilled, not would eliminate any health concerns, but also meet the mandate that we wanted at school to be able to utilize the internet as a tool and not have to compromise anything else.
I just want to clarify for our listeners, just in case they think, well, Andy, you're getting excited about a small private school near Collingwood, and okay, so Pam Colleen warned about this. In May, the World Health Organization warned that radio frequency radiation from Wi-Fi, cell phones, and other wireless devices is now considered a possible carcinogen and placed it on the same list as DDT, lead, and car exhaust. Let me ask you, Roberta, at your school, I mean, this is a pretty bold move you're making. There are going to be a tremendous number of school boards who are going to watch what you've done with great interest, and it's going to ignite a debate right across the province, if not the country.
Correct. But if that, in our feeling, if the World Health Organization is putting it on a concern list and we can provide the tool in a different fashion and not have to worry about those safety concerns, that's the proactive move that we would make as a school.
But let's be clear here. You're not the only school doing this. I know that that 16x9 clip that Andy led in with talks about schools in France and in Britain that are also stopping the Wi-Fi systems.
In fact, many in Europe are continuing to do that.
Where has the pressure come from in your community, Roberta? Is it from the parents?
We didn't really have pressure. We had parents asking questions and students asking questions. And so the research that we did was to look at what would work most effectively for our students, keeping all of the components in mind. So it was phenomenal that the kids' questions and the kids' research, as well as faculty research, we were able to find the system that works effectively for all of the parts that we were addressing.
I want to be careful not to mislead our audience. I don't want to tell them that you've pulled Wi-Fi out of your school because specifically of the health concerns. What is the list of reasons? I don't know how many you have, and what are they in order of importance in the decision?
Well, obviously, in the decision-making process, we look at a number of different criteria. And what we wanted to ensure that the kids here had access to the tool of internet, that it would be reliable, that it would be faster, so to speak, and that then we could eliminate any safety concerns. Also, what it does, this system provides a hub that teachers can then control when kids are on using internet and when kids are not. So that's a whole element that our educators at our facility really felt were important.
Because the reason I think my question was so important and the answer to it is, we have a lot of people listening to this show right now in London who may use this as an argument for our school boards to be wary of Wi-Fi when that may not be the primary reason. So again, if I could ask you, Roberta,
If we can eliminate any concerns with regards to children's health and be proactive with regards to that, we will always do that.
Okay, now let me phrase it another way. Was the health concern about Wi-Fi a primary reason why you've yanked the system?
It was a reason, yes.
And so you're using the precautionary principle here,
yes,
essentially.
Absolutely. Because if there's any question and we can put a system in place that is going to fulfill all of the needs and requirements of our students, and we can eliminate any of those concerns, that's what we want to do.
You heard in the clip that we led into the this segment with on 16x9 that there were some parents who were they're just freaked at the notion of Wi-Fi. Do you have any of those in your community, like people who won't even go into a room where there's Wi-Fi?
We didn't have any parents that came forward that were at our school at that time. We have parents that have joined our school that actually, since we put it in the wired system, have come in to say, thank you very much. We had concerns about this. So we didn't have parents that were up in arms with regards to Wi-Fi at all last year, but we wanted to be proactive to do the research to implement a system that worked best for our school.
Let me ask you this, just before we go, we have to take a quick commercial break, Roberta. McDonald's has just announced yesterday a billion-dollar makeover of all their restaurants, and there are a lot of reasons involved, but they're going to leather furniture and a whole new look. But at the heart of it all is Wi-Fi. I wonder if you cringe at that news?
Cringe at that news? I think that I'm hoping that McDonald's has all of the information that we were privy to be able to make the decision. I'm not sure if they do or not. So
I want to ask you, when we come back, Roberta, what is that information that you just referred to? and the information that you hope McDonald's has as they make this extreme makeover. A lot of people are very, very focused on this issue, and I want to remind our listeners again that Pam has hooked us up with a special guest who we've had on the program before, a professor at Trent University in Peterborough, who feels passionately that we need to be much more aware of the danger of this electro smog. That's a catchy name.
Electro smog. Yeah, it encompasses it all. Everything from the towers to the cell phones to your microwave ovens, everything.
I sleep next to a clock radio. Should I be moving it into the next room? We'll talk about all of that in the next hour. But back with the principal of the Pretty River Academy with bold decision on Wi-Fi when we come back in just a moment here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
See you. I don't know what I'm going to do. If you have Wi-Fi in there, I can't do this to my daughter. I cannot put her through this experiment.
And assembling at a church in Vancouver, a fever pitch building over what they see as a threat invisible to the eye.
Society in general doesn't want to lose a convenience at the expense of safety.
They're talking about radiation exposure from Wi-Fi or wireless internet, and they're concerned it's making their kids sick.
I just think that we don't know, so why risk it?
9:49 now, as we share this breaking news with you, a private school near Collingwood has ripped out their Wi-Fi system, and I have in studio this morning our regular health consultant, shall we call her, nutrition consultant, Pam Killeen. Pam, I'm surprised that after the World Health Organization warned way back in May that the radio frequency radiation from Wi-Fi, cell phones, and other wireless devices is now a possible carcinogen, that we haven't seen this sooner.
Well, I mean, there's been people out there that have been concerned, parents that have been concerned, and this issue has been going on for quite a while now. So, but the problem, of course, is that these corporations, these multinational corporations, have a lot of power and influence over our governments. And for many times, they bow down to them. Our government officials bow down to them.
Back to Roberta Hurst at the Pretty River Academy. Is it near Collingwood or in Collingwood, Roberta?
Hi, it's Michelle Rich, actually, speaking on behalf of Roberta right now. Roberta had to run and deal with a school issue, and she had to actually teach a class. So.
Well, I'm amused by that, and I admire that. Sorry, Michelle, your last name again is?
Michelle Rich.
Okay, terrific. So we're switching horses in the middle of the race, but that's fine.
Yeah.
Michelle, what's your position at the school?
I actually teach outdoor ed and environmental awareness.
Well, let me ask you for your spin. We've been having quite a discussion with Roberta.
Yeah, I've been here.
But what's your perspective on this decision to take out Wi-Fi?
Well, I fully support it. And typically, you know, I'm not one to take rash action. And I really don't look at it as though we have jumped, you know, without making... with doing our due diligence and all the research and reading the studies that have come out. So I support what the school has done on a personal level as a parent and as a member of the faculty. What I love about this school, Pretty River Academy, always strives to support their students in a safe environment. And whether we have conclusive evidence or not, the school has decided to take some action, mostly because the internet connection is faster and the technology is a little bit more conducive to having faculty have all of the controls in place.
Michelle, I want to ask you this. I'm thinking of schools here in London. You just made a reference while at the Pretty River Academy. We really are concerned about the safety of our students. I think I can say that about any school board.
Oh, no question.
I mean, I know Bill Tucker, the director of education for the Thames Valley Public School Board. He's a wonderful guy, husband, father, cares passionately about people. And I'm sure that if he felt that there was a risk to the students from Wi-Fi, that he would be taking a very strong stand. Why do you think it is that after the World Health Organization issued this warning in May that we haven't had more schools taking this kind of a stand sooner?
Well, it's just like why it takes time. It takes time for people to become aware of the issues and to become educated on it because we all have lots of things on our desks. It's exactly like the pesticide issue. Do we still use chemicals? Do we still use pesticides despite the fact that we know what the World Health Organization says about those things. Sure, I mean, I'm guilty of it. I'll use pesticides at the right time and place. Do I blanket spray my lawn? No. So it's a time and a place type of thing.
Let me ask you what the early reaction has been. Now, this decision was taken very, very recently.
Yeah, it's the start of the school year. We started the school year off with new technology.
Okay, but when was the decision made to actually take out the Wi-Fi?
It's been coming. It's been floating around for over a year.
Okay, so has the Wi-Fi actually been taken out? Have you hardwired your internet system?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
And did you notice any ill effects from the exposure to the radiation in the schools? Did the children notice when they left a room or entered a room, whether or not they had headaches, nausea, any symptoms whatsoever?
We didn't have any children at the school that were complaining of those symptoms.
And so before the break, Roberta had said that she had considered some specific evidence in terms of making her decision. Are you familiar with the decision-making process that she took?
Yes. Yeah, I was involved in it.
And so what kind of research is she talking about?
All of the studies that the World Health Organization provided. There's some significant work that's being done down at the university, Trent University in Peterborough. And so we were following that closely.
You're speaking specifically of the professor, Magda Havas.
Yes.
Who is our guest in the next hour.
Good.
I was just going to ask you if she played a key role in this decision.
She played a key role in the information that I brought into the school. I would say that what she had to say, I mean, it can be a little bit woo-woo for some people. You know, it's a little bit out there. But she did have some really basic statements that she made that made a lot of sense to us. And the first statement is, you know, operate on the precautionary principle. And at this school, we believe in making sure that all people have their needs met. So if there's a situation where it's a choice between A or B, and both things provide the same result, so we get Wi-Fi or we get internet connectivity, is it Wi-Fi or is it hardwired? And there are no concerns with hardwired. Let's go with hardwired.
But let me ask you this. Have you had any pushback at all? Because let's face it, if you take Wi-Fi out of your school, it's going to make parents, even in your community, who support the decision, a little nervous about their Wi-Fi at home and at McDonald's and at Williams Pubs and all the other places that now provide free Wi-Fi.
To be perfectly honest, that did not play into our decision.
Right. Well, and what kind of feedback are you getting in the media or locally or among parents? I mean, Roberta gave us some idea of that, but have you got any personal experience with that?
All I've had is parents coming up to me. Actually, this morning I had a parent saying, hey, this Wi-Fi issue, is it a concern? And what do you think the school's going to do about it? And I had to explain, well, we've actually already changed our system. And they said, oh, thanks. That's good to know.
Well, maybe
so there's not a lot of, you know, it's funny because we're in the middle of it. There's not a lot of attention being put to it.
Well, sometimes these issues seem like they're media driven. And of course, 16x9 focused on it. But my goodness, they had some parents on who are very, very, I was going to use the term wired, but certainly very concerned about this. Michelle, we have to leave it there. We thank you very, very kindly. And
if you would pass
our thanks along to Roberta Hurst, your principal, who had to run off. By the way, I have one quick question. I love the name of your school, Pretty River Academy.
Well, you would love the school if you came to visit. It's got a beautiful view. It's a beautiful location. And the people here are wonderful. So I get tingles every time I think about it. So,
well, congratulations on your decision-making.
Terrific.
Well, thanks
wonderful.
For having us. Mm-hmm.
And now you can tell, no, the parents weren't that excited about the decision, or there hasn't been much blowback. But some talk show guy from down in London was interested, so.
I'll let them know.
Okay, Michelle, thanks
for having us.
Okay. We're going to take a short break for a news update. When we come back, we are going to spend the next hour with the professor in Peterborough, who is really kicking up a fuss about all of this, and we'll keep the lines open. I mean, we totally understand if you think there's no concern whatsoever. But I know that families I know here in London are doing little things around the house to protect especially their children from the radiation or this electric smog, as Pamela calls it. So Pam Colleen and our professor from Trent on the other side of the news, right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
I don't know what I'm going to do. If you have Wi-Fi in there, I can't do this to my daughter. I cannot put her through this experiment.
And assembling at a church in Vancouver, a fever pitch building over what they see as a threat invisible to the eye.
Society in general doesn't want to lose a convenience at the expense of safety.
They're talking about radiation exposure from Wi-Fi or wireless internet. And they're concerned it's making their kids sick.
I just think that we don't know, so why risk it?
So are these just hyper parents worried about little Michael and Jessica? Is this just an illusion, this danger that some are pointing to, the danger of radiation from Wi-Fi and from cell phones and from hydro wires and from your toaster and from your clock radio and who knows what other electronic devices? Good morning, folks. My name is Andy Udman. The show is London Today. In this hour, we are going to explore that issue. As you know, in this hour, we always have Pam Colleen, our loudmouth health nutrition expert. What are we calling you today, Pam?
You can call me whatever you'd like, a contrarian or whatever you'd like. But
a contrarian,
yes.
And a recovering vegetarian, I might add. So Pam has lots of interesting views on lots of interesting subjects. I want to stress one thing, though, to our audience, Pam. This is a journey that involves discovery, and we don't have all the answers. And so no matter what your opinion is on radiation from cell phones or from Wi-Fi, we welcome your opinion. We're going to keep the lines open the entire hour. If you agree with our guest this morning, that's great. If you disagree, that's great. 643-1290. In just a moment, we're going to go live to Trent University in Peterborough to talk to Dr. Magda Havas, who is doing some leading research on this whole issue of electric smog. And Professor Havas is on the line. She's listening to this. And I'm just going to ask her to just allow us to set up this whole subject by playing a recent report from 16x9 on Global, which nicely sets up this issue and really reflects a tremendous concern that some parents have about radiation from Wi-Fi. Here we go.
You can't see it, you can't taste it, but some are calling it a serious health threat every parent should know about. Wi-Fi, wireless internet, is in schools coast to coast. But why do some kids say Wi-Fi is making them sick? In a 16x9 investigation, we put Wi-Fi to the test. Here's our Carolyn Jarvis.
They are gathering by the hundreds, hacking a public forum in Toronto, filling a school board meeting in Peterborough.
I don't know what I'm going to do. If you have Wi-Fi in there, I can't do this to my daughter. I cannot put her through this experiment.
And assembling at a church in Vancouver, a fever pitch building over what they see as a threat invisible to the eye.
Society in general doesn't want to lose a convenience at the expense of safety.
They're talking about radiation exposure from Wi-Fi or wireless internet, and they're concerned it's making their kids sick.
I just think that we don't know, so why risk it?
Today, schools across the country are rushing to install it, but these students say the convenience isn't worth the risk.
I had heart racing, headaches,
nauseous.
It's a really weird feeling.
Weak, and I'm really shaky.
And when they're not at school?
Does it happen on the weekends?
No.
There's no rhyme or reason to the symptoms. They range from headaches to nausea, heart palpitations, even rashes. So 16x9 wanted to find out exactly what, if any, threat exists in schools. So we went with this man, industry tester Kavinder Dhillon, to measure the radiation levels in a typical wireless classroom.
Is it fair to say that this would give us an average sample size of what we'd be seeing in a typical classroom?
Yes, we're going to be concentrating on this area. So this will basically give us what the proportional rate is.
To simulate an actual classroom, we set up each computer to stream video, constantly receiving information.
From the devices that are being set up right now, and we got our antennas hooked up, and we're getting the real-life signals with the correction factors from the antennas and the cable losses. Right now, we are basically 113.8 microwatts.
So, in effect, according to Health Canada, this classroom would be deemed safe?
According to the criteria, yes.
So next, we go out into the hallway to check the router, one of several in the school fixed to the ceiling. The levels here hit 2,600 microwatts, 20 times the reading inside the classroom.
People who are actually in the industry who are testing this, they feel this is a high limit. This is very high.
Really?
Yeah.
You heard him. Our industry tester calls that level high, but it's still well within Canada's safety guideline.
So, Pam Colleen, if you walk 20 feet, 30 feet from where we're sitting right now, and look up at the ceiling in the hallway of our radio station here at News Talk 1290 CJBK, you will see a little device on the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little blue box with about four different antennas sticking out of it. It's called a router. And what we just heard is that the microwatts, I guess is the way they measure this radiation, was at 2,600, 20 times what it was in the classroom. I mean, should we be concerned about this router down the hallway here?
Well, I think we should be concerned. And before we bring on Dr. Havas to hear her comments, I'd like everybody to equate this story to the cigarette industry and cigarette science, and how the cigarette industry said for years how safe their products were. And of course, everything, you know, blew up in their face, so to speak. So, you know what? When you put out new technologies, when you put out new products, and the experts out there are basing their decisions on industry-funded science, there is a lot of questionable activity going on in that regard, a lot of conflicts of interest and rash decision-making. So I think we need to be cautious. I think we need to apply the precautionary principle, as was described by the principal at Pretty River Academy up in Collingwood. You know, they very diligently applied the precautionary principle here, because we cannot allow ourselves to be guinea pigs in this big experiment.
Better safe than sorry. In just a moment, we're going to be joined by Professor Havas. We'll be back with her in just a moment. And the lines are open. I want to stress that 643-1290. You may think this is totally bunk, that there's no concern here whatsoever. You'd be disagreeing with the World Health Organization and now the Pretty River Academy, where they've just ripped out their Wi-Fi system. But we'll be back with that in just a moment. Right here in London today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
I don't know what I'm going to do. If you have Wi-Fi in there, I can't do this to my daughter. I cannot put her through this experiment.
And assembling at a church in Vancouver, a fever pitch building over what they see as a threat invisible to the eye.
Society in general doesn't want to lose a convenience at the expense of safety.
They're talking about radiation exposure from Wi-Fi or wireless internet, and they're concerned it's making their kids sick.
I just think that we don't know, so why risk it?
We don't know, so why risk it? If you've just joined us this morning, we're talking about electric smog, the radiation that is produced by all kinds of electronic devices, to the point where a private school in Collingwood has now torn out its Wi-Fi system. Is this just fear run rampant based on whatever, or is there some science here? Well, we want to get to the bottom of this issue, and so Pam Colleen and I have arranged for Professor Magda Havas to join us from Trent University in Peterborough. Professor, appreciate you joining us this morning.
My pleasure, Andy.
Is this all fear-mongering by a few who are worried about things they shouldn't be worried about, or is there some science which suggests very strongly that we should be worried about electric smog?
There's a lot of science behind this that goes back decades.
Decades?
That's right.
I remember, Dr. Havas, seeing one of your seminars where you first became interested in this subject by holding up, I think it was a fluorescent bulb.
That's right.
And just holding it in the air, it turned on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what piqued your interest as somebody who does research on environmental contaminants.
Professor, let's start with what happened in Collingwood, because in terms of breaking news, this is of most interest to us. And I know you had some influence there. We, in the last half hour, we talked to the principal and one of her assistants about why they have decided at the Pretty River Academy in Collingwood to take out their Wi-Fi system. Why did they?
Well, one of the concerns we have is that we're simply microwaving children, you know, from grade 1 to grade 12, depending on the school, all day. When you have these routers in the school, they're much more powerful, for one thing, than the router you normally have in your home, because they have to service a lot of computers. And they're sending out microwave, pulsed microwave radiation all the time, whether you're using it or not. It's slightly worse when you're using it, but that's always there. It's called a base station that's just sending out this pulsed radiation. And we know from experiments that were done, as I said, decades ago at this same frequency, 2.4 gigahertz, that it affects animals. It causes increases their risk of cancer. We know that people who are exposed to Wi-Fi who have become sensitive develop headaches and simply can't be exposed to them anymore. And many of these young children are, you know, still quite healthy, but the more they're exposed, the harder it is on their system. It's causing stress in the body. And they will eventually get to a point, some of them, where they simply won't be able to be in an environment with this pulsing going on. And then they become something called electromagnetic refugees. And these are people who simply cannot live in our society because this radiation is everywhere.
Well, as we know, the World Health Organization has issued a warning. Professor, from time to time, we're going to go to our phone lines to let our listeners join the conversation. Melissa, you have a hypersensitivity to electric smog?
Yes, I developed that about just over a year now.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, I live down in the south end of London myself. You know, I started having some sensitivities I couldn't explain. I had been slightly sensitive before. Things would bother me, like one of my friend's baby monitors would bother me a little bit, and I couldn't use a laptop very well without feeling like a weakness that would kind of travel up my arms a bit. And then last year, about July, I started... Sorry, I'm just nervous. Yeah.
Not at all. It's just the three of us and a cup of coffee. You like tea or coffee?
Tea, please.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, so I was starting to wake up nauseous all the time, and I realized something was going on. I was starting having skin reactions to things, and then it became really obvious what was going on. I started to be able to actually feel equipment that was on around me. I could actually feel cell towers that were around me when I was driving, which was really bizarre.
Melissa, let me just jump in and say that from what you've said already, I know what Professor Havas is thinking, having watched some of her videos this morning, that there are so many experts out there who would say to you, Melissa, it is all in your head. Has anybody said that to you?
Well, you know, at first I kind of wondered it myself. you know, it's just a very strange reaction. And but I and I thought it, actually I fly airplanes for a living, so I thought maybe it was related to my job, you know, from exposure over the years. But I ended up going to a specialist here in London who has 10 other patients with the same problem, all from cell towers in their backyard. And what had happened at our place, we're actually really close, I hate to say this, to the TV radio tower that's in the south end of London. And then they put up a couple more cell towers about less than a kilometer from our place in the past year and a half, the last one being in January. And when they put that one in, it got really bad. But, you know, my doctor, who's very helpful, and he's a specialist, he's an occupational health doctor, and he, you know, basically said there's nothing I can do about it and that I need to move away from it. So right now we're trying to do that. But we're having a devil of a time because, you know, I react to everything. So, you know, smart meters in houses. So, you know, being in a big neighborhood is not good for me. And
Melissa, let me just ask the professor, from what she's heard so far from you, does this sound familiar?
It's very, very familiar. This is the normal reaction that people go through.
And you mentioned in the clip 16x9, you said that not everybody is going to feel this way. It's just so, like some people have peanut allergies. Some people are just hypersensitive to electrosmog.
Exactly. With this type of sensitivity, it's almost like there's a gradient. And initially you can't feel anything. You don't know if you're being exposed. And then eventually you start getting headaches when you use a cordless phone. And then you begin to get ringing in the ears and a skin rash that won't go away. And then it just begins to escalate. And, you know, Melissa is now at the stage where she's reacting to everything. The good news is that you can build up your immune system again and you can, you know, make yourself less sensitive to the radiation. But it takes a long time to do that.
Melissa, let me ask you, you said you fly airplanes?
Yeah, I do. I'm an airline pilot. About 160 passengers.
Mm-hmm. Don't they say that you're exposed to a lot of radiation in an airplane these days?
Yeah, you are actually, yes, and there's different types of radiation. So I actually brought a meter eventually, which helped me so much to be able to actually control my environment. And I did bring it on the airplane, and there is a little bit of RF radiation around your feet. The more problems I have actually are people bringing their cell phones and wireless devices on board the aircraft, because like the signal can't get out, and so all these devices boost power on the aircraft.
Melissa, I want to ask you two things. First of all, we have a couple moments left. I want to stay in contact, so if you would just give Ryan your contact information after we break. But let me ask you to make a list. I mean, this is fascinating. You've got your home environment. You've got the airplane environment. Mm-hmm. Can you just make a list of what your sense is of the devices that you're getting radiation from, starting with the one that's giving you the most radiation to the least?
Well, in my living environment, the cell towers bother me the most, and they're the ones I can't get away from because they're everywhere. So, like us trying to find a place to live, it's very difficult. I can avoid Wi-Fi by not going into certain restaurants. It does limit where I can go. Friends have to turn it off before I come over. They have to turn off their cordless phones. At work, again, what I said before, and also the Wi-Fi in the hotels, that's actually maybe one of the reasons that, that would be difficult for me to continue flying in the future, because there's just nowhere I can stay.
Are you saying that this sensitivity to electric smog now threatens your career as an airline pilot?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yes, definitely. If I hadn't got that meter and gotten help from people, I would not be working right now.
I always anticipate questions from our audience. They're saying, who is the doctor, the specialist that you mentioned that you went to? I was going to ask you immediately. A specialist in what? What is your doctor a specialist?
He's an occupational health doctor, occupational health specialist. I don't want to mention his name. I would happily give his number to anybody that needs to see someone.
Terrific. And then we'll get that from you off the air.
He's actually, he didn't want to, he's pretty neutral. I mean, the way he talks about it to me is I didn't have to explain anything to him when I went in there. He knew everything about what I was going through.
In other words, you're not the only patient in London.
No. Oh, no.
Melissa, do you have any sense of how common this is?
You know, it's hard to say. Like, I have friends that are mildly sensitive to things. So, like, my one friend, she can't use a cordless phone at all. And, I had another friend who came up into the place where we live. It's actually in an apartment, and she could feel stuff here.
Well, I find it absolutely fascinating that you, as an airline pilot, are saying this electric smog, this radiation from everything from cell phone towers to Wi-Fi, is now affecting you so much that you may have to consider giving up your job as an airline pilot.
Yeah, that is exactly the case. Wow. That I've been living with. I don't want to say like it's ruined my life, because I still have good times and stuff, but last year was horrible for me.
Wow. Now, Dr. Havas, do you have any idea the percentage of the population that might be affected by this?
We think it's at least a third.
Okay.
Wait a minute. A third of the entire population?
That's right.
Absolutely amazing. Melissa, if you would give Ryan your contact information, and I thank you so much. A fascinating call.
Happy to help anybody else.
Wow. A third of the population. Do we need to talk about this or what? We're going to take a short break for a news update. Folks, this is absolutely fascinating to me, as I know it is to you. We'll be back with another half hour focusing on electric smog, this radiation which comes from everything from toasters to clock radios to your cell phone, to the cell phone towers, to restaurants, and now McDonald's spending $1 billion to give themselves an extreme makeover, all focused around Wi-Fi. We'll be back in just a moment here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
So, in effect, according to Health Canada, this classroom would be deemed safe.
According to the criteria, yes.
So next, we go out into the hallway to check the router, one of several in the school fixed to the ceiling. The levels here hit 2,600 microwatts, 20 times the reading inside the classroom.
People who are actually in the industry who are testing this, they feel this is a high limit. This is very high.
Really?
You heard him. Our industry tester calls that level high, but it's still well within Canada's safety guideline.
The show is London Today. My name is Andy Udman. Pam Colleen in, as she is every Thursday. And Pam, I want to bring Ryan into the conversation, because we had in the last half hour, if you've just joined us, an airline pilot share an incredible story of all these various physical symptoms that she was exhibiting, and she had no idea what they were. And Ryan, you just had a chat with her off the air, and she told us an amazing thing, which Professor Havas is going to be particularly interested in.
Yeah, it is pretty amazing. And the fact that she actually heard Professor Havas, Melissa, that is, the airline pilot, heard Professor Havas on your show, and that had to be almost a year ago.
It was a year ago.
A year ago. Mm-hmm. And she, at the time, she was going through the symptoms that she was describing, but thought she was the only one. She thought she was alone until she heard Professor Havas describing some of these symptoms on air, and that's what instigated her looking to get relief and some help from them.
Wow.
Yeah, and then heard her on here again today. So.
And here she is, an airline pilot, and she's worried that she may soon have to give up her job because of this very issue. Electrosmog.
Electrosmog, yes.
Electrosmog, mm-hmm. what a term it is. Let's go back to the phone lines. Heather, did you hear the airline pilot?
Yes, I did. And I'm glad that she was able to hear a program like yours where she could figure out her situation and get some help.
What's your story, Heather?
My story is the perspective of a parent. I have a six-year-old daughter, and approximately a year ago, I became aware of this issue and the potential dangers associated with wireless technology. And our family has struggled, but we've tried to work with our local school board and tried to convince them to take a precautionary approach and protect the children, and we haven't had any success.
Heather, what school board?
I'm not sure I should say. Should I?
Oh, absolutely. It's not a problem. All the school boards are dealing with the issue.
Okay, well, it's the Kawartha Pine Ridge District School Board. Like I said, a number of us have appealed to the board. The board has received letters from internationally recognized doctors and scientists who've urged them to take the precautionary principle to protect children against this unnecessary risk, because everything that children in the classroom can acquire through wireless devices, they can just as easily acquire through wired devices.
Absolutely. Let me ask Professor Havas a question for you, and that is, Professor, I'm sure there are a lot of parents who have this concern, who are writing letters and approaching their school boards. What is, to this point, in spite of the warning from the World Health Organization, what is a typical response of school boards when parents come forward and say, I'm just concerned about the effect of Wi-Fi on my child?
They're ignored. That's the typical response. And the teachers in the schools who are also concerned about their students and their own health are simply silenced. They're not allowed to talk about this publicly.
And what has Health Canada said with regards to the World Health Organization's warning that this technology could be a potential or possible carcinogen?
Well, the first time they were interviewed, they said it only related to cell phones, which is nonsense. And the interviewer contacted the head of the committee that made the decision, and that person said, no, it applies to all wireless technology, Wi-Fi, it applies to cordless phones, smart meters, baby monitors, everything that's wireless.
Professor, I mean, what you're saying is exceptionally scary and upsetting for those who may be thinking, well, okay, so an airline pilot in London called the show at CJBK and shared her story. But, you know, there's just a very few people out there who have this electrosensitivity. But you're saying there are millions who have this sensitivity to electrosmog.
That's right. In Canada, we're talking of probably about a million people.
Wow.
That's right. And the thing is, they don't realize it in most cases. The symptoms that you experience, one of the things we're concerned about is cancer, and that's what the World Health Organization talked about. The other thing we're concerned about is fertility, because we know that this radiation affects sperm. And the third thing we're concerned about is our symptoms of electrohypersensitivity, which includes difficulty sleeping, chronic fatigue, chronic pain, depression, anxiety, difficulty remembering things, difficulty concentrating, nausea, dizziness, tinnitus. And if you look at the medication that most people are buying, it's for a problem sleep, it's for pain, it's for depression and anxiety.
And you also talk about type 3 diabetes as well. Now, this is very fascinating.
That's right. In some of our research, we've done a number of different studies with diabetics. And diabetics who are sensitive to this radiation, their blood sugar increases. And if you put them into a clean environment, it drops without any change. And if you put them into an electrically dirty environment, it increases within about 20 minutes.
Let me go back to Heather for just a moment. Heather, you're still there?
Yes, I am.
the airline pilot said that she had all these symptoms but had no idea what they were. And watching some of the professor's videos, I mean, a lot of people just put it down to aging and the environment, whatever. But it was when this airline pilot heard Professor Havas, she thought she had an epiphany. She said, that's me. What was it for you that finally allowed you to put your finger on electrosmog, this radiation from electronic devices like Wi-Fi, that allowed you to find out what the problem was?
I think it came to me in two stages. I do have some experience with sensitivity in my family, but again, like many others, didn't connect the dots. What was the impetus for me this time was someone at my daughter's school urged me to attend a public meeting, an information session, to learn more about it. And I've spent almost a year learning more about it. And I understand that some people either don't have that time or that inclination to learn more about it. But I just liken it to anything related to protecting our children. Whatever product we have in our child's life, we want to know it's safety tested, whether it's a crib or a toy or whatever. And everyone can understand or everyone can recognize that this is a controversy. And some people say there are proven risks. It's not safe. Very respectable people.
Well, Heather, we're going to let you go in just a moment, but I wonder if you can share your contact information, even an email address, so we can stay in contact with you. But from what you've learned so far, since you've researched this, what would you say to the parents of London who are concerned about Wi-Fi generally, cell phones, and all these other devices?
If many scientists said something wasn't safe, that was for your child, you would protect your child against it. Even if someone said it was, if enough people said it wasn't, that would be enough not to choose that product for your child. So I would say use a precautionary principle. Children are more vulnerable than adults.
Okay, Heather, if you would talk to Ryan, I appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Professor, just before we go to the break, let me ask you at this stage to look our audience in the eye and say to them that this is not just fears on the part of certain people for no reason at all, but there is science there which says we need to pay attention to this issue of electrosmog.
There's a lot of science behind this that ranges from, you know, the blood sugar that we talked about to people with multiple sclerosis to heart palpitations to sperm immobility. I mean, there's a lot of research out there.
And the research that our government is relying upon is basically industry-funded research. It's not evidence-based.
Exactly. As a matter of fact, there was a study that just came out, and it was on mobile phone use by children. And in the abstract of that study, it said there's absolutely no harmful effects of this radiation. Yet when you looked at some of the tables they had, they were showing a significantly increased risk for children who use the cell phone, you know, for 5 years or more, who had a certain number of hours on the cell phone, and they simply didn't put that into the abstract. And so when the media covered it, it was a good news story.
Mm-hmm. We had Dr. Beatrice Golomam, remember, Andy? And she talked about this phenomenon going on in science constantly, where data is cherry-picked all the time in order to suit the sale of whatever product they're trying to promote.
That's right. I call it whitewashing when a scientist doesn't really present the facts clearly in the abstracts.
Professor, before we go to the break, let me ask you this. I heard someone say that, you know, this addiction we have to cell phones and texting is so rampant that babies are now coming out of the womb with a cell phone in their hand, which I was amused by. It's almost come to that. Before we go to the break, what would you say about parents' cell phones and the use of cell phones by children?
Well, I would, you know, listen to people like the Toronto Board of Health, who says that children under the age of 8 shouldn't use cell phones except for essential calls, and those in teenagers should use them for less than 10 minutes a day.
And in France, other countries, what's happening there?
Oh, there are a lot of countries now who are issuing warnings about particularly children using cell phones. And as a matter of fact, when it comes to Wi-Fi, the French libraries are removing Wi-Fi from the libraries and replacing it with fiber optics.
I was just going to ask you, I'll do that on the other side. The more dramatic examples, and we now have one here in Ontario, of people who are taking this very seriously, and the Pretty River Academy in Collingwood, Ontario, ripping out Wi-Fi, hardwired internet services is what they have now. People are starting to take this seriously. We'll be back with more in just a moment, right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
So, in effect, according to Health Canada, this classroom would be deemed safe.
According to the criteria, yes.
So next, we go out into the hallway to check the router, one of several in the school fixed to the ceiling. The levels here hit 2,600 microwatts, 20 times the reading inside the classroom.
People who are actually in the industry who are testing this, they feel this is a high level. This is very high.
Really?
Yeah.
You heard him. Our industry tester calls that level high, but it's still well within Canada's safety guideline.
Professor Habas, let me ask you this. We have the Health Minister of Ontario living right here in London. We have the Premier of Ontario right here in London this morning. If you had their ear for just a moment, what would you say to them about Wi-Fi in our schools?
I would ask them to issue a warning to encourage schools to go wired instead of wireless, because we do not want to experiment with young kids and expose them to microwave radiations every day for, you know, years on end. We simply do not want to know how that's going to affect them.
And that's a good point, because we're not saying that they shouldn't have access to internet technology. We're not saying they shouldn't have access to cell phones, but there should be warnings. We should also make the companies producing these products accountable for making their products safer, correct?
That's correct. And as a matter of fact, a lot of cell phone providers now will issue a warning in the fine print in their manuals saying, keep this at least an inch away from your body at all times.
We've seen this private school by Collingwood, the Pretty River Academy, rip out Wi-Fi. Can you give us more examples of places around the world where they are absolutely convinced that Wi-Fi is a serious, serious concern when it comes to issues like cancer and fertility and sleeping and all the other health side effects, Professor?
Well, in a number of European countries, they take this very seriously. France, Switzerland, for example, Germany, they're all taking this seriously. As a matter of fact, the guidelines in many of these countries are much more protective than the guidelines we have in Canada. Our guidelines are based on protecting military personnel and people who work industrially with microwave technology. They were never intended for exposure of children in schools, children who are 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. I mean, this is absolutely ludicrous. So my message would be to the medical officer of health of the province is to begin to look at this research that's coming primarily from countries outside of North America where they have funding for this, and heed the warning. Health Canada has been aware of these studies for a long time, and if anything, their warnings are becoming more and more pro-industry. One of the things they used to have in one of their guidelines is they recognize that some people are more sensitive to this radiation, and they simply removed that from the last time they updated their guideline. The other change they made, which I can't understand, is that they said their guideline only applies to federal people who are on federal sites. So it doesn't apply to schools that are under provincial jurisdiction. They can select their own guidelines, and this is a change from 1999 to 2009.
Now, has Health Canada done any of its own research on this technology?
Very, very little. They simply don't, they're not allocating the money to this technology. And indeed, they're not even, I don't think they're even considering the research done in Europe very seriously, because if they were, they would have issued warnings by now.
But in Europe, they have a watchdog committee that was just set up. The acronym is REACH, REACH, and the scientists in Europe are far more diligent there than they are here, it seems.
They are, and the doctors there as well. German doctors issued a warning quite a few years ago. It's called the Freiberger Appeal, and it was sent to government, and it was saying, look, we have patients that we can't heal anymore. They go back into their homes into an electromagnetically dirty environment, and their symptoms come back. So we're simply, you know, prolonging their agony by dulling the symptoms, that something needs to be done to get better policy to reduce exposure. And the government has a very important role to play in this.
Okay. We have just a couple of moments left for people who have joined us midstream, as we often do, because we have people joining us literally every minute, Professor. Can you summarize this whole problem of electrosmog, what are the devices that we need to be wary of? And then what are the health symptoms that people should begin to analyze in terms of whether they might be symptoms of this issue?
The key devices in the home, I would say, in order, would be your cordless phone. These radiate all the time, whether you're using it or not. The base station is sending out a signal. It's like having an antenna in your home. If you have wireless routers for your computer, then they're radiating all the time. If you have a baby monitor, believe it or not, you're placing your infant near a microwave transmitter, and that's on all the time. In Europe, they're voice-activated. We don't have voice-activated ones here yet. If you happen to live near cell towers, within 400 meters of a cell tower, and in populated areas like downtown London, downtown Toronto, it's very hard to avoid this technology. If you have smart meters on your home, they're giving this pulse out on a regular basis. All of this adds up. So your home should be your sanctuary, and you have to keep it as electromagnetically clean as possible. If you have kids in school, they're now beginning to install Wi-Fi in all the schools, so all children are going to be radiated. And the same goes for office environments as well. The symptoms range from cancer to infertility, particularly the effect on sperm, to a whole series of symptoms that are called electrohypersensitivity, that I call rapid aging syndrome, because they resemble aging, and that's how a lot of people explain them away. They include poor sleep, chronic fatigue, chronic pain, headaches, depression, anxiety, difficulty remembering things, problems concentrating, nausea, dizziness, skin problems, and ringing in the ears. And all of these have been linked to this type of exposure.
I wish we had more time, but just one more thing. How do you get away from electrosmog?
It's actually quite easy. You can clean up your home considerably by simply replacing things that are wireless with wired technology. If you happen to live near neighbors who use the same thing, of course, this penetrates walls. There's paint you can use to keep the radiation out. There's film you can put on your windows. There's fabric you can put on your curtains. Extremely sensitive people sleep under a canopy that has silver fiber in it. There is now clothing that's available, so you can wear underwear that has silver fabric in it that is very effective at shielding this radiation. You can buy hats that protect your head. And electrically sensitive people swear by some of these products, that it really allows them to go out into public with minimal health consequences.
Now, Dr. Havas, do you have a website? And could you tell our listeners what it is?
I do. It's www.magdahavas.com, and that's spelled M-A-G-D-A-H-A-V-A-S. I also have a YouTube site with videos, and that's www.youtube.com/Magda Havas.
Absolutely fascinating, Professor. Wow. And that story of the airline pilot just was a dramatic illustration of everything you said. We thank you so much for your time this morning. You've given us so much to think about. We'll have you back again soon. Thank you, Professor.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Pam, absolutely amazing.
Amazing.
And the airline pilot?
Oh, incredible story.
How
sad.
It's sad.
And I can relate to that. Like, I used to be very, chemically sensitive, so...
Wow. Mm. And up to a third of the population, she thinks, may be suffering. 11 o'clock news just around the corner. When we come back, oh, yes, I have a third hour. I can't go home yet. McDonald's with a $1 billion makeover. And guess what they're installing in all their restaurants, 1,400 restaurants? Wi-Fi. One of the stories we'll be covering in our next hour. Right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.